All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, coming to you a little bit later than we usually do this week, and that was by design. I went ahead and texted the Joes earlier this week, said, hey, I know my show, we usually do it on Thursday afternoons, but we got the NFL schedule coming out. I mean, that seems like a big deal. That's something I definitely would like to bring up on the show and kind of do a little bit with and talk about. Why record the show and have it come out, and then hours later the schedule comes out? I'm already behind. I'm already stale. Let's get it out there. I want to talk about this thing. I want to wait to see it. So that's going to be a big part of what we talk about today on the show. But we got a lot going on. I mean, let's not forget, with all the schedule hoopla, we're now a week away from the draft, thank God. And the entirely too long NFL draft process is about to come to a merciful close. And it'll be fun next week to watch the draft. I'm going to have friends over like we do, and it's going to be great. So there's that. The Jags have new uniforms. The Dolphins have new uniforms. There's a lot of stuff going on. And it's just another testament to the NFL's ability to have turned themselves into a league that's almost literally a 12-month-a-year cycle with news. I mean, they have found a way where, I don't want to say constantly, but every few weeks at least, for 12 straight months, year-round, at least once every few weeks, there's something with the NFL that is a big deal, or there's news, or just something. Whether it's free agency, combines, drafts, this and that, schedule releases, uniform. I mean, they do stuff all the time. And that's by design. And it worked, because I'm all over it today. And the schedule release has always been a very special thing for me. I mean, if you look at sports, football is really the only one where the schedule is a big deal. Doesn't mean anything in hockey, basketball, baseball. I mean, if you put the 2019 baseball schedule on a table right now, I don't think I'd waste the energy to bend over and pick it up off the table. Just whatever. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. They all look the same. But football schedules, you know, they're almost like snowflakes. There's something unique about each one, and you look for the order of the games. We know who they're going to play every year. We know that in perpetuity, you know, 50 years from now, I could tell you who they're going to play. Obviously, the formula will probably be changed by then, but under this formula, you can just go down the line year by year, and you can tell who you're going to play, 14 of the 16. So we knew that, but seeing how, when, prime time, what network, all that stuff, that's the fun part. And it's changed so much over the years as far as how we get the information initially, but the feeling is the same. I remember when I was a kid, I would just read the newspaper at my nana's house after school, I've been reading the newspaper since I was like 8 years old, and I used to go to my grandmother's house after school. My mom and dad were, you know, still working until after I got out of school, and at nana's house, she had the paper. I'd sit on the counter, I'd eat whatever food she made me after school, and I'd look at the paper. I used to love the comics, used to love all the sections, but basically the sports and the comics. And one day in April every year, without knowing it in advance, I'd whip open the sports page, and boom, the Bucks schedule would be there. It'd always be so exciting. And then as the years went on, more technology, obviously, internet, things like that, you know, there'd be a little bit more of an advance notice. But even then, and even as recently as a few years ago, you know, there'd be a release, and you'd maybe know about it in advance this time, but it'd still be like a sudden release, and that was cool too. And then the NFL Network and the NFL started doing this show where they released the schedule on a show. Hey, 8 o'clock tonight, they would say. Or they'd say it in advance. Hey, next Thursday, 8 o'clock, we're going to release the schedule. And for a few years, that was how we did it, where we actually did. Like, remember tuning into that show and actually finding out the schedule? Like, there was a real narrow strip of time where that was how it worked. And they still do the show, obviously, but now we have the leaks, and we didn't have those at first. At first, the NFL Network show was a big deal, and now, of course, you have the leaks and everything. You know the show is a formality, and the schedule itself, usually by noon, 1 o'clock that day. Like earlier today, I was on Twitter getting everything we needed, and it was even made easier by the Bucks this year because someone mistakenly at the Bucks put the home schedule up on the website well before the official release point. And so we got to look at all 8 home games then. And I was on Twitter earlier, like I said, and I saw somebody posted, hey, here's the 8 Bucks home games. And I was like, really? Like, what? Who's this guy? Like, what? It wasn't somebody like in the local media or anybody big. And I was like, whose sources are this guy? What clown has all, how can I trust this? And then I realized, oh, okay, everybody knows because they put it on the website. It was screenshotted, the whole thing. So it eventually all came out, and we have our 2018 schedule for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And gotta say, it's a little underwhelming, but again, it's to be expected. First of all, the Bucs haven't done much to earn any of the cool stuff on a schedule, like, oh, we got three Monday night games and then a Sunday nighter plus a Thursday. You know, all the, you know, you can have a schedule where you barely play half the games on Sunday at 1 o'clock. The Bucs, even when they're at their best, even when they're winning the Super Bowl and even when they're doing this, that, and the other, I think they got like three primetime games once. That was like a big deal. You know, the Bucs are always going to be, and Tampa's always going to be backseated in those situations. And I'm okay with that. As I have a little chip on my shoulder being born and raised here that I kind of appreciate having. I think it's more fun that way. Saying, yeah, screw them. Hey, that's all right. You know, let little old Tampa just get shoved to the back. That's okay. That's okay. We're here. You know, that's always been my attitude toward it. And that's, again, when the Bucs are good. We're lucky at anything, and that's what happened this year. The Bucs have 16 games. They play Sunday at 1 o'clock 15 times. 15! But, to their credit, and I was happy about this, they get the one Monday night game, and it's at home. And it's always awesome to have home Monday night games. Now, I was under the impression, I think a lot of people were today, I'm recording this late Thursday night now that we have the schedule, but you might be listening to this at any point. But I think a lot of people were thinking, okay, well, you know, everybody gets a Thursday night game. No matter how many primetime games you get, everybody gets one Thursday night game. So when we saw that the Bucs had one Monday night game, I was like, oh, cool, okay, so we get two primetime games because you'll have the automatic Thursday night or whatever that one is plus the Monday nighter. But then I looked up and down the list, and I was, you know, I don't actually see it. Maybe it's a mistake. Did they not put it on here yet? Or, you know, but no, that this year, not every team will be on Thursday night. Every team, all 32, will be in primetime at least once, which to me is what the rule should have been all along. You don't have to put everybody on Thursday night, but I guess for fairness reasons or competitive balance, since people bitch about the Thursday games, they try to spread it around. But anyway, not everybody has a Thursday game. The Bucs are one of the teams that does not. And again, no complaint there. I mean, that's fine. Although the Thursday game last year against the Patriots, I had a lot of fun with that night. Did a whole show the next day, and that's fine. You know, we still have a home Monday night game against the Steelers, which will be the second time in the last three visits for the Steelers. It's been on Monday night. Of course, they only come here every 8 years. Back in 2002, the Super Bowl year, the Bucs lost to the Steelers in December. It was late in the season, a 17-7 snoozer, after what was a much hyped build-up to that game, ended up being the last game the Bucs would lose that year. They won the rest of them in the playoffs and the regular season, won the Super Bowl. But this time, it'll be in Week 3. And the thing that stood out about the Bucs' schedule, and we'll, you know, there's all kinds of angles to it, but the thing everybody was jumping on Twitter and, oh, you know, people look for reasons to make a big deal out of something. There really isn't much to make a big deal out of with this schedule. But the Bucs get three tough ones out of the gate. And if you look at who they play, again, we already knew all that. But the order it comes in, you get three division champions in the first 3 weeks. They open up on the road on September 9th. And again, the Monday night game is the Monday night game. Other than that, 15 Sunday 1 o'clock games. So Sunday 1 o'clock, September 9th at the Saints. All right, tough one. Tough one. Then they come home. Home opener, week 2. Sunday at 1, September 16th. The Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions. Okay, fun one, big draw, should be a good time. Then week 3 is the aforementioned Monday nighter against the Steelers, September 24th, 8:15. So right out of the gate, at New Orleans, Philly, Pittsburgh. Three of the best teams in the NFL last year. And a lot of people were up in arms on Twitter, like, oh my God, this is going to be a brutal side. How could they put all three of those games right at the front? You got to be kidding me. I mean, look, you know, I think people kind of, an NFL schedule is not like a college football schedule. I mean, I'm not saying that Steelers and the Eagles and the Saints aren't good teams or that they're not better teams than some of the other teams, but there's not as much of a variance between the teams in the NFL as there is in college. You know, if the Gators, for example, opened up with Alabama, Georgia, LSU, and FSU in their first four, you'd be like, whoa, that would, come on. Yeah, that's ridiculous. You want to spread those out over the schedule. But in the NFL, I mean, it's, you know, if they were playing Carolina instead of Pittsburgh in week three? Would that make you feel any better? If they were playing the Eagles later in the year instead of week two and they put the, you know, you stuck the 49ers in there, for example, just looking at random home games we had. It doesn't, I mean, they're all tough games. They're all tough games. And are these three a little tougher? Maybe. And that's another thing. You'll hear in the next day or two, you're going to hear this over and over. Tune it out. It's meaningless. Strength of schedule. Ooh, the Bucs have the fourth toughest schedule for 2018. You don't know who has what tough schedule to the end of the season. Then you look back and say, okay, they had the toughest one. Because the records do not translate year to year. Jacksonville being an example of that last year. Jacksonville in 2016 was, what were they, 3-13? So on the strength of schedule matrix going into 2017, they would have been considered a layup. Oh, yeah, easy one there. That factors into their schedule, 3-13. And that's what all they do is add the records up of all your opponents from the year before. But in reality, Jacksonville was much better. Another example is the Bucs in 2016, who were 9-7. So teams that played the Bucs last year got credit for playing a 9-7 team as far as their strength of schedule before the year started. At the end of the year, obviously, we realized not the case. And that's true here. So all the stuff you'll hear about, oh, the Bucs have the toughest schedule. They played the combined record of their opponents as the fourth best of all. That's all garbage. It doesn't mean anything. Again, I'm not saying that the Saints, Eagles, and Steelers aren't good teams. Of course, you get the 49ers on here who had not so great of a record at the end of the season overall. But you saw how they played at the end of the year with Jimmy Garoppolo, and that's quite a different subject. So we don't know what the hell the story's going to be by the time it's all said and done. But I was excited to see the one Monday night game, and I have no problem with Sunday at 1 p.m. I mean, if nothing, it's consistent. I've complained before, and I won't go into a whole harangue about it now, but, you know, Raymond James Stadium, and lots of NFL stadiums like this, and I don't know, not that we should be trying to copy too much about European soccer, but one of the things they get right is all of their stadiums seem like they have covered seating. And I'm not talking about domes. They're outdoor stadiums, but they all have seating areas that are primarily covered. Maybe a few seats aren't. And Seattle does it the right way, too. And I don't know why we couldn't do something like Seattle did when we built. And this is nothing against Raymond James, which is a nice facility, but architecturally it's just, I mean, we really dropped the ball there. Not just aesthetically, which aesthetically it's terrible. I mean, they did nothing to make it look like anything distinct. But number two, and the Dolphins just corrected this with a hundreds of million dollars in renovations. You know, they didn't put a single bit of shade there. And I know, you know, my favorite stadium of all time, my two favorite stadiums of all time are the Sombrero Tampa Stadium and the Swamp Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Those are the two stadiums closest to my heart. And neither of them has any shade. I get it. But since we were building a new one anyway, I wish they could have done something to maybe just provide a little bit of shade. So anyway, we don't have that. Sundays at 1 can be a little bit rough. But, like I said, from a TV standpoint, I have no problem with it. I like the 4 o'clock games, I have to admit, and we could still have some of those with the flex scheduling. But the thing that jumps out, of course, is that Monday night game against Pittsburgh. And, you know, I've told this story a few times, but I'll tell it again probably in September when we actually have the Steelers game. I think I told it back before the Atlanta game, the Monday night game this past December. And it's a story I like telling. But, I mean, Monday night games are special, especially if you're a Bucs fan like me, a longtime Bucs fan who has grown up. I mean, I've been watching this team since I was born in 1980, or maybe a few years after that, I guess. And I remember, like, as a kid, Monday Night Football was just completely out of the question. Like, the Bucs were terrible. And the Bucs didn't even get the cursory road game, like, thrown in. Like, hey, here's a Monday Night game. Like, now I think they try a little bit harder to make sure everybody gets something, even if you're a terrible organization. But in the 90s and in the 80s, I think the Bucs played a Monday Night Football, like, in 1984 or 85 or something. I don't remember the exact time. And then they did not play on it again until I was in college. So I went from literally, you know, I'd never seen it, like, all my entire childhood. I don't remember anything from when I was 4 or 5 as far as the Bucs. My earliest Bucs memory is probably the snow game in Green Bay in 85. I remember distinctly watching that. But, like, freshman year of college, after the Bucs finally made the playoffs in 97 for the first time, I remember one of the things I was thinking, even during that playoff run in 97, even as that was all going on, I was already looking ahead to next season. I was thinking, hey, we got to get a Monday night game next year, right? Like, it's finally going to happen. Like, it was like Nirvana. Like, it was like Shangri-La, like this unseen heavenly utopia that I had never been able to. I was like, it's finally going to happen. So sure enough, the schedule came out that year in April of 1998, and the Bucks had the Monday night game against the Green Bay Packers in December, and I was so geeked. You don't understand how excited I was for that game. Like, you think, oh, whatever, Monday night football, that's cool. No, for 17, or I was, yeah, I turned 18 by that point. 18-year-old Bobby, all right, was over the moon. So I went to the University of Florida, as many of you may know, or many of you have no idea. The point is not that I went to UF. I went to USF here in Tampa my freshman year because I screwed around in high school. I got into all the colleges I wanted to, but my mom didn't like my grades enough to let me go. Said, hey, you're doing a year at USF before you go to, UF or wherever. So freshman year, I'm at USF. I took a night class, one night class. It was calculus, I believe. So I'm taking calculus on Monday nights at 6:30. It ran from like 6:30 to 8 every Monday, which was, not a bad schedule. I mean, I had other classes too. But the point is, this class went all the way up until the first week in December or whatever it was that you get out for winter break. And our final exam ended up being scheduled on Monday evening, 6:30, the same time all of our other classes were, with the Bucks playing their first Monday night game of my lifetime, basically, at 8:30. And so, those of you may remember back in high school or college, a lot of times the teachers will tell you, they'll say, hey, here's how this grading works for this class. We'll have to take 5 tests, they're each going to be 10%, we'll have a midterm that's 25%, we'll have a final that's 25% of your grade. Like, a lot of times that was how it works. Sometimes they do subjective grades where they would just kind of give you a grade, but a lot of the experiences I had back then, they would just give you a hard and fast formula, and they'd say, all right, yeah, 10% each for these 5 tests, 25% for this midterm, 25% for this final. So you could work out going into the final based on the grades you got on the other tests, exactly what you needed to get a certain grade. So, going into the test, it'd be like, okay, if I get an 87 or better, I get an A in this class. If I get an 86 down to a 46, I've clinched a B. So I really can't do much except to get an A if I get above an 87. But I could get a 48 on this thing and still get a B. There was a range of points, and you could do the math and figure it out. And it was actually kind of neat because that wasn't part of the class, but that taught me just as much about math and numbers, doing that so many times when I was a kid. And that was always how my mind worked, by the way. A lot of kids and a lot of people, they don't even want to know. They just want to study their ass off and go, don't even tell me what I need. I'm going to go nuts here. I'm going to try to get a 100 on this thing, and we'll see what happens. That's a really good attitude to have. I'd love to say I was one of those people, but of course, if you give me the numbers, I'm going to figure out exactly the bare minimum that I need to just barely get by, and that's what I'm going to shoot for. That's just the kind of person I was as a student, and I've gotten a little better since then, but if you tell me, hey, a 52 on this test gets you a C+, and to get a B, you have to get an 82, I'll try for the 82, but I'm not going to try to get a 95. I'm going to try to get an 82 and a half or an 83 on that test. I just want to get that number and get the hell out. So this was even more complicated because here we are on one of the most exciting nights of my life, and maybe I ought to be embarrassed by that, I guess, as an 18-year-old, that the Bucks finally playing on Monday night was so high on that list. But you don't understand. I was geeked. Test at 6:30, kickoff at 8:30, Brett Favre, Warren Sapp, Monday night, Raymond James under the lights. Are you kidding me? And so I'd done the math, just like I was talking about. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but it worked out to something similar to what I said. I needed like an 85 on this test to get like a B in the class. And if I didn't get an 85, I had a C pretty much locked up. Like, I could get like a 42 or something and still get a C. Something like that. I don't remember the exact numbers. So I'm thinking, okay, I can get a B on this. Like, I can get an 85 or better. Let's get the 85 and get my B in this class. And let's do it. So I studied. I mean, I really did try. I'm not saying I didn't try. I get in there. I walk into class the night of the test. I'm decked out. I'm wearing my Bucks polo. I got my whole, I mean, I got all my game gear on. You know, I was kind of a dork when I was 18, as all of us were, whether you want to admit it or not. So I come in there, like, all ready to go to the game. You know, people are looking at me funny. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to the game after this. Like, I wanted everybody to know I was going to the Bucks Monday night game right after I turned this test in. I was hauling ass in my Pontiac Grand Am from the USF campus all the way to the stadium. So I get in there, I start taking the test. And you know how you kind of get into one of these tests and you can tell within a little while of starting it, you know, if you have a shot to do what you set out to do or not. So I was not going to get an 85 or whatever the hell it was I needed. I could tell early on I wasn't going to get it. And then, you know what I did? I mean, you could probably guess. I just did that toward the final, like, third of the exam. I don't think I even did any of the problems. I think I just, like, Christmas treed it or wrote. I might have just left stuff blank, turned it in. I was the first one to finish my exam. And this is a class of, like, 25 people. Turned it in, said salute, see you later to the professor. I got in the car, drove down to the stadium, no regrets. And I think the Bucks won that game after sacking Brett Favre. It was something like 17 times. It was a great game, like phenomenal game. And the Bucks actually ended up going 8-8 that year. Big letdown after that 97 season. But that night it didn't matter. It was Monday night at Raymond James Stadium. I was a season ticket holder. I mean, I was just in heaven. It was so much fun. So I know if you're someone who's been following the Patriots or the Giants or, you know, the Steelers or one of those type of teams your whole life, Monday Night Football's a way of life. Like, two or three times a year, you just count on it. But I've never taken it for granted. Even as the Bucks have gotten better through the years, and even as the NFL has gotten more generous in the way they dole out the primetime games, still never gets old, and I still savor those nights. And we'll talk about all this again in September, I'm telling you. I can already tell you right now. I'll be talking about it at that show. But Bucks Steelers, Week 3, looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to the whole schedule. And rounding it out, you know, nothing special here. The Bucks don't ever get hung with three straight road games, which only happens to six teams, I think, this year. They try to avoid that. The bye week is in Week 5. That's another thing maybe that's noteworthy. A lot of people say, oh, man, we got the early bye week. I want that late bye week. The season's so long. They're so beat up. It's better to have the bye week in Week 10 or Week 11. Well, I'm glad you asked about that because I used to think the same thing. They've done research on it, though. In fact, Bill Barnwell posted about it today on his Twitter feed. And as far as team success in the playoffs, they've researched, you know, teams that made playoff berths and how they did and where their bye week was. Zero correlation. Not no correlation. Zero correlation. Which I guess is kind of the same thing. And where a team's bye week was and how successful they were in the playoffs. If you want to go by win percentage instead of just looking at the playoffs, like how good was teams' records or were teams' records in years with a certain bye week in, you know, Week 4, 6, Week 12, you know, wherever it was. And the sample size is kind of small, but it's actually the earlier bye weeks seem to have a higher winning percentage. So don't fret about the early bye week. There's schools of thought like, oh, the early bye week gives them a chance to come off training camp and get freshened up. By December, you're focused on the prize. You don't need a bye week then anyway, or late November. Usually Thanksgiving is, by then, all the bye weeks have happened. So don't worry about the Week 5 bye week. Other than that, nothing really special. They do get three straight home games, the Niners, Panthers, and Saints, in Weeks 12, 13, 14. And other than that, like I said, Sunday at 1, Sunday at 1, Sunday at 1. You can set your watch to it this year, except for that Week 3 game, and I am A-okay with that. Of course, there are about six teams that have the five primetime. You know, like I said, it ain't going to be Tampa. Even when Tampa wins a Super Bowl, that's barely going to be what Tampa's like. But looking at the schedule this year, you do have, well, you have 10 teams, actually, that get five primetime games. The 49ers, Cowboys, Packers, Chiefs, the Chiefs always seem to get more than they deserve, by the way. The Rams, Patriots, Saints, Eagles, Steelers, and of course the Seahawks. Everybody loves to stroke off the Seahawks. The Chiefs always seem like they're on Monday night a lot or on just primetime in general, and they never really deserve it all that much more than the Bucks do. But anyway, those 10 teams are on quite a bit. Bucks, one. Even Browns, one. And so on and so forth. So you get my drift. But you know what? That'll change when the Bucks start winning. I'll take three in a given year, to be honest with you, and just be happy with that. Maybe I've been conditioned to not expect much more. So with all that said, I also wanted to get into something real quick today on the show, and it's not anything that's happening right in the NFL, but it's just the latest thing with player safety and potential rules changes and things that mentally they're trying to prepare us. You can't do drastic things all at once. You have to do them in stages, and that's what's happening to the kickoff. Nothing is happening in the NFL this year, but in case you missed it, the NCAA this year approved another rule change to the kickoff. You know, they already moved kickoff touchbacks to the 25 a few years ago, and the NFL has followed suit on that one. Well, now, in college, not only is a touchback go out to the 25, but if you fair catch the ball, let's say the kick isn't into the end zone. In the end zone, you don't have to fair catch it. You can just down it or just let it roll through or whatever. But if the kick is short of the goal line, so it lands somewhere between the goal line and the 25, you can fair catch the ball, and you can get the ball at the 25 all the same. They basically made the end zone 35 yards long now. So if you do one of those, what do they call them, shrapnel kicks, or I forget what the word is for it. Flare kick. Those ones they put up high and drop in inside the 5 so that you can't get the 25-yard touchback, but your team also has time to get down there and cover the kick, and maybe you can tackle them at like the 10 or something. That's not going to work anymore. Or it could still work if teams don't stop you from doing it, but now they can stop you from doing it by simply calling for a fair catch. Just fair catch it at the 8 if you want. Ball goes to the 25. And it's not a good rule, obviously, as an actual rule. Like, you would never make this rule as an actual solution to anything, but they're not trying to solve anything. They're trying to make this rule first, and after a few years of this where people are like, dude, this sucks, just get rid of kickoffs, I give up. That's the whole point, is to get you to give up and not fight it when they eventually eliminate kickoffs altogether. And listen, here's my thoughts on it. I'm a football purist. I'm coming around, but my first thought with any type of change with stuff like this, like really radical stuff, is like, leave it alone. Football is fine. I'm tired of hearing about all the crying and whining. The kickoff is first of all, it's an exciting play when there's actually a damn return. It has the potential to be one of the most exciting plays in football. But second of all, I just can't imagine like starting a game any other way. Like, imagine like getting to the stadium, starting the game, and like the offense just kind of runs out there and just lines up and runs a play. It just doesn't seem, just like, come on, we gotta kick it off. I want the guys charging down the field. I want the flash bulbs popping off around the stadium in the Super Bowl when they do the kick. That's the fun part. That's what kickoffs, you think of starting a game or changing a possession, that, somebody scored, they're going to do a kickoff now. They say it's one of the most dangerous plays as far as injuries. They have research, they say, that indicates that. I get that, too. I'm a guy who has never played in the NFL, didn't even play in college, but I did play in high school, and I do even play up to, as recently as a few weeks ago, was playing in a semi-pro league, and I'm talking about a real football league, not flag football. Pads, helmets, the whole thing. The Dunedin Pirates, you can see it on the website link here. And being the mediocre player that I've always been, who didn't quite get a ton of starting reps, what do you think I've done a lot of in my football career, from high school all the way through to, like I said, a few weeks ago? I've always done special teams. I've been on kickoff, I've been on kickoff return, I've been on punt, I've been on field goal. I'm a special teams maven. And again, not at a high level or anything. I'm not trying to pretend that I'm some sort of a baller. My point is, I've done this stuff before. And kickoffs suck. All right? They're no fun. I mean, they can be fun. I shouldn't say they're no fun. They can be fun. But there is a lot of potential for injury. Like, football's a rough game anyway, but like when you're in close quarters where you're square up with a guy who's, 2 feet in front of you and you're trying to block him or hit him, okay, that's one thing. But when you're sprinting down the field, I'll tell you what, I'm not just saying this to like make myself sound like some sort of a warrior, because again, the semi-pro football league I was in, the level of play was not high. But it takes balls, okay? It takes balls to buckle your chin strap and run down there through a gauntlet of people who are trying to ear hole you. And you're not supposed to look at them. You're supposed to be staying in your lane and trying to get the ball carrier. And he's changing direction. And when you change direction, again, there's somebody going to ear hole you if you don't look and have your head on a swivel. And even on kickoff return, even when I'm the blocker, I hurt myself last year doing that. I tore my triceps. And why was that? Because a guy was running full speed at me, full speed, and I wasn't running that. I was kind of backpedaling a little bit, but I was pretty much just in the athletic position, stationary, and he was running at me. And I went to block him, and it put too much stress when I absorbed the blow, and I had a slight tear in my tricep, which, again, was not a big deal. I mean, it was fine. My point is, though, like, injuries do happen on those plays, and they are rough plays, and there's some carnage out there, more so than anything else. Now, if you ask NFL players, a lot of them are going to say, hey, no, we're fine, dude. Don't worry about us. This is what we signed up for. In fact, a lot of the special teams guys are guys, again, who are fighting for jobs. And if you eliminate kickoffs, that's going to change the makeup of rosters because your third string, fourth string wide receivers or linebackers, whoever, those guys that populate special teams, they won't be needed for that anymore, and it might change how teams select their rosters and who gets to be the backups. Because, you know, when you get down to some of these, you know, way down the list, like the fifth, sixth receiver, and you don't feel like there's that much difference between the two guys receiving-wise, well, hell, which guy can we put on kickoff team and which guy is not one of those type? But, you know, that makes a difference. And somebody will get the jobs. It's not like they're going to cut jobs, but different people may get the jobs is all I'm saying. And so, as someone who loves football, and I'm asking you to think about this too, because I love football. I see a lot of people, like I was reading the Pro Football Talk story earlier today about the NFL maybe potentially adopting this and eventually taking that step toward eliminating the kickoff. And the usual refrain of people comes out, oh my God, just call it flag football already. This is so dumb. Put skirts on them. Come on. Football's football. It's a rough game. That's what you know, and listen, I'm willing to bet a vast majority of the people who type those comments have never actually done it. I'm sure some of them may have, too. There's plenty of people that do this stuff, and they're happy to do it, and they say, hey, I know what I'm doing, and the NFL guys that do this are an example, because I've seen a lot of them the past few weeks saying, hey, man, don't worry about it. We're fine. We know what we're doing. But a lot of those people love to say, most of the people that bitch about any of these rules for player safety, whether it's targeting or hitting of any kind, and the helmet, the new helmet rule we talked about a couple weeks ago, or now the kickoff. Oh, come on, put dresses on him. You got to be kidding me. Yeah, you know what? Tough guy, you go out and do it. Because it is dangerous, and it is, you know, kind of a big deal. And I love kickoff. I mean, I'm not anti-kickoff, but I'm coming around to it. And listen, as much as I love football, if this is what it takes to preserve football, if we have to burn little tiny parts of the village in order to save the village, you know, because I don't want to see football go anywhere. And I don't think football's going anywhere. I think that's overblown. But if things like this help keep things at bay, you know, there are worse things. And the other reason I'm coming around to it, I'll give you one more. I've bitched about this during the season many times. It's because lately, these guys don't even know how to play special teams anymore, and there's a penalty on every goddamn kickoff. I mean, the Bucs games, and I don't, you know, I would have to get numbers to verify this. This is anecdotal. But the Bucs commit a holding penalty or a block in the back penalty on every goddamn kickoff and punt, every single one. Like, I'm stunned every time we have a punt or a kickoff return, and there's not a flag. And it's just so dumb. Like, I've said this before, like, as a special teams coach, have you told the Bucs to have one guy catch the ball and return it, and the other 10 guys to put their hands behind their backs and just, I'm not going to say don't try to block, but just set picks like in the NBA. Like, that's all they're allowed to do. I guarantee you our net starting field position would be greater. Don't even try to block anyone. Just make it, get in the pick position, take up space, and let the returner get as much as he can get. And I guarantee you at the end of the year, if you do the average starting field position, it'd be higher because of all the freaking penalty. I mean, every single freaking kickoff, every single punt return, up, block in the back, illegal block, holding. Like, these guys don't know. I mean, look, they teach you that in high school, like one of the first things, like block him as long as you can. Keep your head in front of him. Don't hold him. And once he gets away from you, let him go. It ain't that big of a deal. If he tackles him, he tackles him. But some of these guys just don't. I mean, they'll grab, they'll hold, they'll block in the back. Like, they don't, they're just not, I don't know if they're just not smart enough or what. But, and by the way, I very, very, very smugly will remind you that I have never once been called for a penalty on a special teams play, ever. So, watching that crap every week, I'm warming up to the idea of just screwing it all together and just getting, you know. And then Greg Schiano's idea, which is not a bad idea, but you know, you have to do something instead of kickoffs. And you can't have no kickoff or nothing because you have to have teams that are trailing an opportunity to get the ball back. And without an onside kick, what do you replace it with? Well, he's saying instead of the kickoff, it's your ball at the 30 or the 35, you know, whatever you want to do, just like it is now, only instead of kicking it off, it's just your ball and it's 4th and 15. So you can punt it. Punts are a lot less dangerous than kickoffs. You can go for it if you want to, and that'd be the new version of the onside kick now, is you could go for it. And if you can get a 4th and 15, I'm not sure if the success rates on 4th and 15 are quite the same as onside kicks. It's probably a little higher, plus you have to worry about bogus PI calls. But that's, you know, not that's an idea worth talking about. And then you could even, like, if it's an obvious situation where you're down late, you're going to onside, well, now you're going to go for that 4th and 15. But you could even fake the punt, and that'd be like the version of the surprise onside, just at some point midway through the game, things like that. I would need to see it in practice. Maybe one of these spring leagues can try it or something that they're coming out with until then. But the point is, if you want to save football, you have to at least be open to listening to some of this stuff. Not that I think football's going anywhere anytime soon, but just keep an open mind is all I'm saying. It's not happening anytime soon. It was just a thought I had in some of the news this week. So, finally, we'll get to some... You know what? Yeah, I'll do the uniform thing real quick. If you want to stick with me, go for it, because next week's the draft. Dolphins uniforms. They dropped the stupid navy blue little, you know, trim BS and just went to aqua and orange, which... On one hand, I'm very happy they did, but on the other hand, I just can't understand why things so obvious take so long. 5 years ago when they came out with these uniforms, like literally within 2 seconds of looking at it, I said, oh, hey, that navy blue piping is stupid. Why do they have navy blue? It detracts from the whole uniform. So 5 years later, hey, you know what? We should really do, and they do it. Common sense, like literally just either doesn't happen at all or it happens 5 years too late in the NFL with this uniform stuff. And I blame Nike, as I always do. Then you got the Jags, who are like a big pendulum that swings back and forth. They can never actually get it right. They either go to one extreme and they look terrible like the Bucks, like they have the past few years with two-tone helmets and garish number fonts and striping, or they swing back the other way and eliminate any type of anything and just have basically teal and black practice jerseys. So that's where we're at now on the pendulum. They screwed it up again, although to their credit, they got the helmet right. The helmet looks great all black now instead of that stupid two-tone thing. But their uniforms from their inception to about, what was it, early 2000s, the Mark Brunell years, basically, were just absolutely gorgeous. Black helmets, teal, little gold piping, really just made everything pop. And for whatever reason, they changed from those, and since then, they have made a series of absolutely moronic changes. I don't know why anybody there, or I should say, I don't know why nobody there is smart enough to do it the right way. But again, I've given up on... I should just be happy because the Jags... This upgrade is... It's certainly an upgrade. Like, it, as lame as what they came out with today was, I shouldn't complain because it's a definite step in the right direction from what we've been seeing in the NFL. And I think there's a little bit... And the Browns are getting ready to do something, too. There's a little bit of a tidal wave coming towards simplification. I'm hoping the Bucks are next. And again, the Glazers, I'll never forgive them for what they did. The idiots that designed them from Nike, I'll never forgive them for what they did. But maybe, just maybe, I have an inkling of hope we're about to be out of the woods soon. So that's my little uniform corner on the podcast today. If you want to email me, as all, at yahoo.com is the email address. That's BOBBYGAMEDAY at yahoo.com. Thanks to Rudy Nunez for emailing me this week. And if you want to get me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, I want to thank the Joes, as always, for having me and hosting this show on their illustrious website, joebucksfan.com, which I have a feeling may have a little bit of action this week. I don't know, with the draft coming up. Don't forget about the draft party. Buffalo Wild Wings, South Dale Mabry, South Tampa. About, I'd say, 1,000 yards from where I'm sitting right now doing my show. I mean, $20 all you can eat. The atmosphere, getting to hang out with fellow Bucks fans. I mean, it's going to be a scene, man. Have fun if you want to look for some fun to have. And they got hotel rooms blocked off. It's crazy. show up to that. But either way, we obviously have a lot going on next week. My show next week, I might do the same thing because my show, again, going out on Thursday afternoon would be pointless when the Bucks have their draft Thursday night, the first pick in the draft. Their first pick, I should say. Everybody's first round pick Thursday night. So I'll wait a little bit and probably come out with it Friday like I did this week. But in the meantime, happy 2018 schedule release. Let's start pouring over it. Do not go through and mark which games are wins and losses. That's a waste of your time, too. I will talk to you next week. We will do all kinds of fun stuff with the draft. And it's the actual draft now, like actual the draft. So not speculation, the actual draft. All that coming up next week. Until then, wherever you are, thank you for listening. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, and go Bucks.